I love you too. Don't get me wrong.
I don't.
I love you too, right? Sarah.
Oh, I love you both. I love you too. And I love you too.
I love you two humans. I don't love you two. And that's why the Predators are my team.
Too many men. Too many men.
Oh, that's way too many.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Too Many Men podcast. My name is Allison Lucan, and I am joined by, apparently, the obsessive hockey watcher, which we're going to get into, and the looking so cozy today, Sarah Sivian. Sarah, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. Yep, I did my job last night and watched a few hockey games, so we're going to be here with the takes.
And we would, of course, not be Too Many Men without our behind the scenes genius who once again comes through, because friends, by popular demand, we are back on YouTube. You can find our channel at youtube.com/@2, there's an at sign in there, friends, @2_much_man. And the person you have to thank for it is the wonderful Shayna Goldman. Shayna, say hi.
Hi.
Hi. All right. Well, we have so much going on. We go from kind of a quiet time around the All-Star break to now everything's going crazy time of year. And that means we have a ton of what, Sarah?
News. Some might say a ton, or what about a bit? It's a bit of news.
That was the drama we never knew we needed with that. Oh my God.
Feels good.
That was amazing. All right. Well, let's get into it.
This lemon sticks is too good.
This is fantastic. All right. Let's start with some big news that's coming out as we record, actually, for those of you who are following along. It's the time of year when all of the general managers seemingly have nothing better to do. This seems like this could be something that is done in the off season. I don't understand the timing at all.
But this could have been an email.
I get the timing. Everybody wants to go to Florida mid-season. Yeah. Everyone's like, I'm done. I need a break.
Well, I understand.
This is arduous for a GM.
But I understand, but there's like 15 games left, and like some of these teams, like, it's very important times in your, anyway, this is my other opinion. The GM meetings are happening, people. They're all down in Florida, which means that a bunch of quote unquote insiders stand around in hotels and try and get bits o' news that we will then break down for you. So we're going to share what we think we know, acknowledging that news is still breaking as we come to you. But there are some rule changes and also some proposed rule changes coming out of these GM meetings. So let's start there. And I'm reading the reporting of the tremendous Michael Russo at Russo Hockey on the Twitter. This is a rule change that goes into effect immediately. He says players can't sit on boards awaiting line changes. A team will get a warning first, then refs will be instructed to apply a penalty that's already in the rule book. NHL feels it's not good hockey and it's dangerous. A linesman, I did not know this, a linesman was cut by a skate in the Wild Winnipeg game by a Jet player. I don't necessarily have a problem with this, and I like the quick action of it. Sarah, do you like that this is now officially, even though it apparently was always officially a rule, is now officially a rule that is going to be enforced?
Yeah, I like that, especially because I feel like we've been seeing more, and as the game gets faster, it's inevitable you're seeing more injuries to refs. It's like, you gotta protect them as much as whatever, like, we're criticizing them, and maybe part of the protection we can get into it will be one of them sitting maybe in the box or in the press box. But if we're not doing that, yeah, obviously protect them. It's scary when you see any type of skate injury. So this is a small thing that they should be doing that they can easily do.
Shayna, do we risk reducing the number of too many men calls if players can't be closer to making a line change? What do you make of this ruling?
General managers are so intimidated by the too many men takeover. And it does feel like we've been getting a higher rate of too many men's per 60 this year. I mean, can't confirm, but that's my quick eye test math for you.
That's all that matters.
That's really, it's the vibes. But it does, I mean, like the Maple Leafs cannot, this is why the rule is in place. The Maple Leafs can't stop taking too many men penalties. So Brad Tree Living was definitely up there at the podium saying we need to make a rule change. But no, like Sarah said, the game's getting faster, so it totally makes sense doing something just for safety purposes. Sorry, Alex Ovechkin, you can't straddle the boards waiting to jump over anymore. But it will be a sad day if we don't have too many men.
Dude, and I can just say, for him sitting on the boards, which he recently did in front of me, he holds that stick so far back, I literally thought he was trying to impale me. But that's a topic for another time. All right.
That is boots on the ground information that you can only get here. But that, you know what? You always see anyone between the benches, like especially their early games, like you see them like reacting to that way more. That makes a lot of sense. Like, I feel like the highest percentage chance of that happening is if someone's waiting like he is.
All right. Let's move on to something that is proposed. And Sarah, I definitely want your take on this because you're someone who has traveled and followed a team on the road. The NHL, this is reporting by Chris Johnston at Reporter Chris. The NHL is considering a change to morning skate protocols. And so for those of you who don't know, before any game, if a morning skate is held and either team can choose to not hold it or make it optional. But the default is that the home team always skates at 10:30 and the away team always skates at 11:30. So the proposed change would start both of those skates 15 minutes earlier than typical. So the away team would now skate at 11:15, and that would obviously require the home team to start 15 minutes earlier, so at 10:15. Sarah, I've noodled this a little bit. I don't know what my opinion on it is yet. What is yours?
Why? I mean, that just seems like one of those things you forget and then it's like, oh no, like I'm 15 minutes. Like, you time this out, it becomes part of your brain and then you're like, oh no, I'm 15 minutes late to whatever. But I guess it would make me, I don't know. That's annoying to me. My ADHD brain doesn't like that. Just keep things the way they are in this aspect. I'd like to see the reasoning, I guess. But at the same time, to be honest, my worst trait of beat reporting was that I would tell people I wasn't going to tweet the lines because of I don't want like the face daily fantasy people to copy my work, but I really just didn't want to go to morning skate. So like, it honestly wouldn't have affected me that much.
The only thing I can think is that maybe like the players want more time to rest. And I will say, like, if we're prepping for pregame coverage, like it, I mean, but it's, yeah, it gives you another 15 minutes of time, which doesn't sound like a lot, but can be a lot. Shayna, do you have an opinion on this at all?
Yeah. I wonder like what kind of sparked this? I wonder if some players, like you're seeing, not every team has a practice facility that's as close to the arena, and not every player lives super close to the arena. I wonder if that's a factor. Mm. Imagine like you get stuck in a shit ton of traffic and then like your pregame nap and your whole day gets screwed up. I don't know. Maybe that will help. It seems like a minor tweak, but I mean, if everybody felt strongly enough about it, I guess there must be a reason.
I know. I hate morning skate. It's just like the song and dance, the asking the same questions. I guess you can get creative sometimes, but practice is always my favorite. That's why I'm not in the NHL.
That's why we love Torts too, right? Mr. No Morning Skate.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. So why do I make you put on your gear twice? But here we are. Also potentially on the list, this is again a proposed change, is a change to Rule 63.A(4), adding the goalie to the list of players who can get a penalty for intentionally dislodging the net. I like this one because I do think it doesn't happen a ton, but when it does, I'm like, come on, that's bullshit. Like, the goalie clearly was like trying to stop play because, and he can just use his skates because he's obviously in the unique position to knock the net off. Sarah, should goalies be held accountable if they're going to knock the net off to try and stop play? She's thinking.
Yes. If they're going to try. I feel like also when you say this doesn't happen often, but it happens sometimes and you're like, come on, it really is. That's what a rule book is for all these minute details, because you know they come out at the worst possible times. And it's like, okay, we need to be clear about where we stand on these things. And if you think, I was doing research on this because I wrote about it the other day. If you think this is like a ton of rules came out, rule propositions came out of this week, it's because this is the highest amount of proposed rule changes from GM's meetings in 20 years. So they had some shit to say. And I like that because it's about time we update the rule books, because when we talk about officiating, it comes back to the NHLPA complains that, okay, well, we haven't updated the rule book. So now it's kind of a back and forth. And these rules don't automatically go through. This is a tangent I'm on right now. They don't automatically go through. It goes to a committee. So we'll keep an update. But anyway, back to this one. What else do we think about it?
Shayna?
I mean, why not, right? I mean, you can think there's two ways you're going to see a goalie knock the net off. I can think of like the Henrik Lundqvist days of him turning around and just two-hand shoving it off to get play to stop. And I'm fine with that. I think that there are certain instances, like, you know, when like a goalie's mask breaks and then play doesn't get stopped. Like if I'm a goaltender, I'm turning around in the most dramatic way and throwing that net just to stir shit up. If I get a delay of game, I'm taking it because I'd rather that than take a shot with a broken helmet, which we've seen happen. But I think, God, does it have to affect the Leafs again? I think it does. And I'm blanking on who it was, but I remember watching games last year and maybe it was Samsonov. I'm blanking. I have to go back and figure this out. But there was a goal you would watch kick the net off pretty often. And it was like a subtle kickback. And it was just happening a little bit too much that, like, me watching the game as a casual viewer is like, that probably should be penalized, right? If it's, it looks intentional. Oh, there's too good of a quality chance. Like, then you got to do something. You know, the whistle's going to blow and that's off its mooring. So I'm fine with it, right? Everybody should be held accountable for it. And if we see the calls are a little bit too often, like, then it's another conversation to have. But why not try to make things a little bit more fair, especially because the net can come off rightfully so easily.
One final change that we were talking about in our chat a little bit, and I'm not happy with what it turns out the clarification was. And this is about the fact that a coach can challenge puck over the glass, which basically results in a delay of game penalty. And Shane was like, this is great. And I'm like, but wait, what is it that they can challenge? And the problem is, just like in real life, we can't legislate morality or intent. So here we are, where basically the challenge is actually not what I think it should be, which would be impossible to prove, which is, what was the player trying to do? And did it inadvertently go out of play? No, the challenge can be about if the puck actually hit something and that is what caused it to go out of play. The double risk on this is, if you lose the challenge, the penalty still exists. So if you lose the challenge, because you then have to sit a skater, you go to a 5-on-3 situation. I was excited about this. I am no longer excited about this. What say you, Sarah?
Can you elaborate?
Well, you can challenge puck over the glass.
Yeah.
But the only thing you can challenge for is, does it hit something? You can't say, like, the whole point of puck over the glass is that players used to do it to cause a stoppage so that they could get some rest. So they made it a penalty.
Yes.
But now it's like, there are so many times where I feel like we see a player hit the puck out of play and that was clearly not their intent. And now it's a penalty. And I'm saying that should be what you can challenge versus whether or not it just hit something.
I just feel like we're kind of getting away from the bigger issue, which is like coaches' challenges in general. It's like, okay, if we expand them, are we going to keep expanding them into every single penalty? Puck over the glass, this is truly one of the things I can see both sides of, where like it can be so consequential and I'm not going to be happy with any decision they make. I think this is going to prolong a game for a few more minutes, but it might be the best way to make it fair for everybody. Because I think about the 2006 Cup with the Oilers with the puck over the glass and that results in a goal. But like at the same time, you have to score a goal. So get your penalty kill good. Like it's just, I don't know where we're headed when it comes to coaches' challenges. And there were a ton of coaches' challenge proposals. So puck over the glass, it's something we complain about a lot. Hopefully this is just the inspiration to eliminate what you were talking about how players used to maybe get a few seconds with it. And it's like, if they're still doing that, that's going to be like, okay, well, maybe I get even more seconds, but I don't know. I really don't know. I get annoyed with coaches' challenges because it's just like, oh, but like if it's going to result in a penalty, if you're wrong, fine. Okay, fine. It's just so much.
Shayna, your dreams were dashed when you put this in the chat. What was your thought process when you first heard it versus what you now know that this is?
Yeah, I'm the same as you. Because at first I'm like, wait, this could be really interesting. This could be something good because you don't want it that a team gets a penalty in a really important part of the game. Like, you want to be efficient. I know nobody wants things to go that much longer and slow the game down. And I'm completely there too. But you also want efficiency. And if we're checking if things go out of play, like a missed stoppage, this felt right. But then you hear what it actually is and you're like, oh, I wonder how much we're actually going to see it used. That's my biggest thing, because now you're not risking going down 4v5, it's 3v5. And that's a big difference. The other part of it too is I wonder how black and white is going to be. Like, video coaches are so good at this that you see now, forget goalie interference because we don't even know what that is. But with offsides calls, teams are very careful when to use them. It's very rare that a team gets an offside challenge wrong. And if it is, we are debating the smallest millimeters of ice, which then you have the whole, should they be challenging? Is it egregious conversation to have? But like, for the most part, we're seeing a lot more efficiency and a lot more usage of an offside challenge. Will this be one of those black and white things as well, that when it gets used, it's for the right reasons? And, you know, it's a quick, let's check it. We're right. Okay, great. Move on. So I would be curious if that's the case. But I wonder too, like, the league takes over challenges and automatic reviews for things that are challengeable in the last minute of play and overtime. So even if it's something that maybe we didn't think needed to be checked, like, the league can intervene. And now we have a 5-minute stoppage with 3.2 seconds to go. Like, it, we'll see how annoying this gets. We'll see if it even passes, but we'll see how annoying it gets. And if it does pass, and how coaches use it to whether this becomes just another thing to slow down the game or something that actually can be for the best. But it's just a slippery slope with challenges. Like, I like having some sort of system there because everybody wants things to be right, especially in the playoffs, and you don't want games and series to be decided by this. But how much interference do you really need?
Absolutely. There were not any proposed changes to OT, which I'm actually okay with. There's also news that it sounds like the NHL is going to be doing a behind the scenes series that will center around 10 to 12 star players. That sounds like it might be going down with Amazon, so we'll watch for that. But one other bit of news that came out of these GM meetings, not necessarily tied directly to them, but it's tied to the unfortunate passing of NHL vet Chris Simon, who died. His family came out and made clear the day after the news first broke that it was via suicide, and that this was an individual who suffered from CTE. We are going to discuss this a little bit, so if this is not your cup of tea, please fast forward. But what this has brought back up is a debate about the role of CTE in hockey. If you look at Simon's career, he played 857 regular season and playoff games over 15 NHL seasons and fought more than 100 times, racking up 1,800 plus penalty minutes, the 67th most in league history. And of course, Bettman and Daly are coming out today and saying, well, we don't know, who's to say, we have to see what the science says. And we understand this from a legal protection perspective. This is what the league has to do, but come on. We've debated this a million times, and Bettman was speaking as we started to record, so I've not had the opportunity to see his full commentary live on it. But first and foremost, we send our great empathy to the Chris Simon family. This must be a devastating time for them. And we continue to see advocates like Alan Walsh coming out and saying we've got to pay bigger attention to the issue of CTE in this sport. And obviously, of course, all sports. Sarah, this news is a story we unfortunately keep having to talk about, and we keep having to hear the league try to brush it under the rug. Any new reactions to this, or just is it continued frustration and disappointment?
Well, it's fucking bullshit from Gary, if you ask me. Every time I talk to him about some type of serious issue, I mean, I know this probably ruins chances of what, me being an insider, I think the ship has sailed. But I every time, it's the most unsatisfying answer. I do understand that he's a lawyer and that he has to protect the league. No, he has to protect the owners. And I just think there's such a better way to go about it. I think if you even look at tobacco in the US, yes, these tobacco companies are funding their own warnings. Like they have warnings on a black label. Like there needs to be some type of acknowledgement of this is tied to CTE. And there needs to be, I've been talking about this a lot recently, so much better with NHLPA and initiatives. And I know people like Chara are working behind the scenes to, oh my God, I forget his name and it's going to kill me. I'll find it and we'll link it in the episode later. But I was at the All-Star game and a former Maple Leafs goalie has been really, really big in his advocacy for players staying connected, not just NHL players, AHL players. There needs to be a network where they can all help each other because Gary sure as shit isn't. There's no healthcare set up. It's just, the cycle perpetuates over and over and you get these guys struggling in silence and then it's too late when we look back and we do this. I hats off to any alumni that are making these strides, which are happening this year. So I'll say it's not on them though. It shouldn't be on them. The league has a responsibility, or the league should have a responsibility. And I'm interested in how somebody like Marty Walsh, who is a labor expert, is going to advocate for players as the years go on. It's just tough. It makes me so angry, and we all need to be better.
And Shayna, like I said, this isn't something that's unique just to hockey. We've seen the NFL come under scrutiny for this. We've seen multiple players suffer in other sports for similar reasons, CTE related. Where are you on this issue? Where can we see possible opportunity for anything to improve even just a little bit?
I mean, Bettman and Daly are lawyers and we know that and we know what to expect from it, but it doesn't make it any less disappointing to hear the same statements get reiterated every time. The science lacks and we have to listen to the medical experts and the medical experts don't know. And I understand that they have to do that, you know, for liability purposes, but you get to a point where it's the year 2024. Like, things have advanced. And if they haven't enough, it's time to invest in them. You know, the NHL, all of hockey should have a deeply rooted interest in this because the people who are playing these games and suffering these head injuries and dealing with the long-term effects are not just like vehicles for entertainment. They're people and they have to live with the effects of playing afterwards. And for some, it's obviously harder than others. And, you know, I understand there's so much we don't know about the brain and there's so much that the medical experts don't know about this just yet, but it feels like there's a path to at least put the effort in and try to change that. And I think that would go a long way. The NHL has deep pockets. I don't think we'll ever see that happen. I would love to see if the NHLPA can do something to build that relationship and teach players about this a little bit more. I think that first and foremost is what you can do, the risks of playing a certain way. And that's why, you know, we were talking about Matt Rempe and we're talking about it would be really nice to see someone in the organization sit him down and say, you are putting yourself at risk and here's what can happen to you. You can still make your own decisions. And obviously there's going to be a pressure to feel that you have to do that, but here's what you're risking. And when that gets so hyped up, what he's doing and the league promotes the absolute hell out of it for entertainment reasons, it goes right back to this point. You know, it would be nice to see the NHL treat players like the humans that they are, care about the long-term effects. And I think, you know, no matter what, if the NHL or NFL or anybody gets involved, we've seen the NFL donate money before and have programs to do it to try to come up with things for player safety. It still always feels half-assed because you wonder how much they're doing it for the good PR versus actual caring, but it would be a step in the right direction because it's a serious issue that they are going to keep brushing under the rug no matter how many times like they have to face it head on. And I get it. That's their job, but it's disappointing nonetheless.
Well, wow. Go ahead, Sarah.
Frank Cervelli just said, ask Bill Daly whether the NHL's viewpoint has changed with additional medical studies that show a definitive link between CTE and repeated blows to the head. No, Daly said. I think the science is still lacking. Like, they're still saying
they're always going to, unless, like, they're literally forced not to. And that's what sucks. Like, they're always going to say that to protect themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe invest in the science.
Wow. Interesting. Who knew? Interesting. In other injury news that is far less significant, well, it's not far less significant, but it's not CTE. Are we having a spleen era? I don't know what's happening here. Mark Stone has been out indefinitely with a, his is ruptured, right? And then now the Jets have announced that Gabe Vilardi.
Lacerated,
thank you. And then Gabe Vilardi, and I don't even know how that happens, but Gabe Vilardi has been diagnosed with an enlarged spleen. Folks, I know nothing about the spleen, but apparently it's pretty significant. Everyone is saying this. Everyone is agreeing. And like, there's literally no timetable for these players. Like, two spleen injuries in the course of 6 weeks. Do we have thoughts on the spleen? Anyone?
I mean, my brother got one after he had mono when he played college soccer, and he basically had to stop playing soccer. Like, it is a pretty big deal. I guess it happens after.
Wow.
Sometimes sickness. I mean, I'm not going to diagnose anybody, but we're all getting sick more lately. So maybe that's just kind of a result of that, and maybe a sensitive spleen.
Like, what are we doing here? It's so strange. It's so crazy. Like, the things that the injuries you'll hear and in the NHL, and this is so totally one of them. Like, I wonder if that's what it is. But this is something too, like, we don't know anything about. Like, we haven't been in our spleen era before, and now we are. And it's like, you know, I remember seeing someone say something about Stone. They're like, yeah, mine, I had a lacerated spleen, and I was basically stuck on a couch for months and blah, blah, blah. Like, things like that. Like, how do you get up, and then let alone play contact sports? Like, we've seen it, you know, how players come back so quick after an appendectomy, and you're like, how the fuck do you do it? Like, I don't think that this will work that way.
Well, it's something curious, to be sure. And please don't at us about the spleen. We know we don't know. And
we need medical stuff.
Spleen conspiracy.
I don't, Shayna. I actually don't. One last little bit of news to discuss. I don't know if we even have any commentary on this because we don't have details, but to close out, at least for now, it seems the issue of Corey Perry's contract termination by Chicago, it was announced last week that the NHL and the NHLPA have reached a resolution on the Corey Perry contract termination. There was no grievance filed, but it sounds like he's going to be getting his money or some money. Thoughts at all? Anything? Bueller?
I mean, look, he's already playing again, and seems like things are going fine for him, and the commentary around him when he joined the team was enough for me. So, sure. I mean, at least things are getting, you know what? At least things are getting settled. At least it feels like the NHLPA, like, the wheels are moving more than before. That's what I have.
Okay. Sarah, anything?
Yeah. Roger that.
Copy. All right. We'll end our bit of news with one last thing. And we just wanted to give stick taps to Cami Granato and Emily Castonguay, who recently were announced to be getting extensions as assistant general managers in Vancouver. Always positive news to see things like that happening. All right. We have some hockey talk to break down because, my friends, it is this crazy, silly season. And this time seems even crazier, silly. How the hell are the Caps in a playoff position? What is going on in the East? There are all kinds of storylines to go. Meanwhile, John Tortorella is scratching who, Sarah?
Sean Couturier. Did I do it?
No.
What is it? Couturier?
Couturier. Rich asked me last night when he
say that.
When he got scratched, Rich was like, I hope you bring this up on the podcast tomorrow. Make Sarah say who did John Tortorella scratch? Ask her specifically.
I was praying we didn't.
Couturier.
Couturier. I'm never could never be me. I'm never gonna be able to say it. But
I could never relate to that one.
I mean, 19 seconds in, get a goal.
The game's right. The Leafs. We're back at the Leafs.
All right. Well, Torts is Torts. He scratched his captain. I bet the Coots is back in next game. And here we are. We continue. But there are all kinds of storylines going on. And I want to see which ones you guys think are the most interesting. We have the Red Wings, who come all the way back just last night against Columbus to keep their playoff hopes alive. They currently sit in the second wild card position. But they're jockeying with, like I said, the Caps, who, wait for it, let me get the exact number, have a minus 27 goal differential, which is ridiculous. The Islanders are on a 5-game winless streak. The Sabres, although they lost in Vancouver last night, are 6-4-1 in their last 10, Carolina's won four in a row. Looking at the East playoff picture, where currently Tampa Bay and Detroit sit in the two wildcard spots, with Washington, the Islanders chasing with games in hand, and the Sabres and the Devils with not games in hand. What do you think is going to happen in the East, Sarah? Who are you impressed with, and who's a fraud?
I am so fed up with any team that has like an egregious goal differential. I always have been, and it's so annoying. Like, you can never be right in the eyes of a fucking Islanders fan. At first, they were so mad that I said the team was bad and boring. Then they're mad that I said the team's okay and boring. Then they're mad that I said the teams, that it's impressive that the Canes beat them. Like, yesterday, I'm like, oh, wow, this is like, I'm obviously being sarcastic, kind of, when I'm like, is this the best team in the world? And one of the Islanders fans came at me and they're like, the Islanders suck. I'm like, oh, let me like find my at and see what you said to me about this a few months ago. You're probably pissed that I said they sucked. So which one is it? And then they're like, well, look how they play against the Panthers. And I'm like, they beat them? Like, what are you talking? Like, whatever. It's just, the Islanders don't have the juice. They don't deserve it. They do absolutely nothing at the deadline because of Lou's handcuffs. And then he cries that everybody's too expensive. I'm like, you're just signing the expensive guys because you don't want to do your research on like you new exciting players. And we just let them get away with that. I hate them. I hate them. Really hate the Islanders. I don't want to see them anywhere near the playoffs. I think the Red Wings are exciting and fun. I want to see them, even though exciting and fun means different things to different people. It's not exciting and fun to be a Red Wings fan right now. It's exciting and fun to me to watch and see, okay, what pieces does it take and where are they in the plan? And like, I really like testing my theories about them and seeing if I'm right or wrong, but I can understand as a fan of the team, you're probably not thinking the same, but they're really on a precipice of something and it's interesting to watch. The Caps, I don't know. I like Charlie Lindgren. I think it's fun to watch, like, how far can a good goalie take you? Yeah. Ovi's not dead yet, and he's kind of proving or disproving any theory that, like, you have to go along with a narrative. Like, okay, he's kind of going off now. Let him cook, I guess. I still don't want to see I just don't like it. Like, I don't enjoy watching the negative goal differential teams. So anytime there's one, it's just, like, really not fun for me. And that's a general rule I've learned about myself. So I'd like to see the Red Wings.
I would too. And for the record, Money Puck currently has the Red Wings with the best odds to make it in of the teams you just mentioned, Sarah, at 24.7%. By Sarah's logic, Shayna, the only other team that should really be in this conversation with a positive goal differential in the East that's not in a playoff spot is the Buffalo.
Don't!
Is the Buffalo Sabres.
I hate it.
And they're, what is it now, 5 points out? What do you think should be happening in the East? What is the most egregious team in a playoff spot that shouldn't be, and who should be there instead?
I love the Buffalo Sabres and I hate them. And every goddamn year they get our hopes up to crush them. And it feels like it's too little too late because they have more games played than everybody else. And like, even last night's game, I wasn't worried. Like, okay, they lost to the Canucks, but you're watching when they're good, they're just cooking. And you're like, yes, finally. And then it's like, no, just kidding. Like Tajay, he starts popping off and Jeff Skinner is soaring and flying. And then all of a sudden they just want to like spit in your face and be like, no, we're still bad. And I just get so annoyed by it. But I am like, I feel like the Bowen Byram trade rejuvenated them. I just don't think it's going to be enough. I feel like the Capitals are going to slip in. And part of me looks at the Flyers and
That's
I'm like,
insane.
Do you? Right? And like so much of it is on Charlie Lindgren. He literally took over as the number one. He was crushing it. Then he trailed off a bit. And then you saw the team kind of get a little wobbly again. And now look at him again. Look at him go. And you have guys like LaPierre stepping up and Connor McMichael and players you didn't expect. I do think that's exciting because I like that the Capitals are still in it, but they've stuck to the plan, right? And I think sometimes, like, I think that's what teams need to see. Like, if you can be honest about yourself, you're not necessarily out of it, but maybe you're building yourself up for the future, which I feel like they've done the last years a little bit. But I'm like, do the Flyers want this? Like, I get it. They stuck to their plan. And then you watch some of their games and you're like, guys, like, this is your spot to keep. You don't have to give it away. Nobody wants that second wild card seed. Like, you can be fine. And yet they're like, actually, are we? So it's just creating chaos. But I'd like to see the Red Wings do it
They're the fun. Yeah, Kona is, I don't know if you guys can hear, Kona's screaming for the Red Wings. She's so upset with their 5-on-5 play over the last 2 months. She's so mad at Alex Lyon, who's destroying my fantasy team in the process. I just don't like that they fell apart because they lost Larkin. So we'll see how it changes. Like, look, they should not be proud of yesterday's game, even though they came back against Columbus. Like, I'm sorry, they ate shit for so much of it that I'm like, I'm not happy for you. And the Islanders, my best friends, I know Islander fans love all. Me. They really are, because I shit on Lou Lamoriello and I'm such a Ranger fan and whatever bullshit I have been hearing for months. Like, oh, you can't talk about their trade clauses. It would have been nice to see them add a capable defenseman at the deadline. I think that really would have done wonders for them. I think the Patrick Waugh effect is real. We're seeing how good they are defensively since he took over. But I just wonder if he's at his limits with this roster, because you see the way that they've trailed off. I wrote a story for them going tomorrow. I sat down to focus solely on the Islanders on March 11th, and they have not won a fucking game since. And every bad
you're habit, the problem. That's the
I'm
problem.
The problem. It's me. Every
good job.
Thank you. Every bad habit that you saw in the first half is like creeping back up. They're like the rush shots against that they worked so hard to fix. The goaltenders aren't making the timely saves, and it's like they have nothing. So I don't know why nobody wants to be in the playoffs. I don't know why. Everyone's like done.
Okay,
early.
Here's my thing though. I was having this conversation and I am legitimately pondering this. I get from a team perspective, it is a revenue boost to get into the playoffs. But what was it? 2 years ago when Nashville got in, when they had no business getting in and they were just thoroughly embarrassed by Colorado and swept in four. Was that two years ago?
That sucked though, because Soros got hurt 2 games before the playoffs.
Okay,
started.
Fine. But
they were
like,
going to eat
if you're
it
the Capitals, do you okay, you can get into the playoffs and get a couple games of revenue, but like if you're going to end up being thoroughly embarrassed, like do you want to be like, do you see what
nobody
I'm saying?
Nobody thinks, yeah. Like,
I know
hockey players
they want to win.
Are pretty
and,
delusional.
I
think they're delusional. I mean, not nobody thinks that. I feel like there are some players I've met along the way who are kind of like, well, yeah, that would definitely suck for them, and they'd be honest and funny about it. But feel like people have to be delusional to be a professional athlete to
for
some
sure.
degree, right?
But you see what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, like,
no,
100%.
Exactly.
If you're like, management, too, what do you do?
Yeah.
And I guess they traded it away, though.
Do you look at your team and go, do we have the potential to do damage in the playoffs if we get there? And, like, you have to be realistic about that. If you're the Capitals, do I think you could do damage in the playoffs against Boston, Florida, the Rangers, or the Canes? No, I don't see it at all. Do I think the idea of a Canes Capital series is kind of interesting with storylines? Sure. But do I think they're going to do it then? No. The Red Wings, they're the one team that if they make the playoffs and they don't get that high draft pick, they're okay because they have a great prospect pool. They're the one team that can afford it. The Islanders are the one wild card to me because when they're good, they can be a team that can do some damage. I think if Ilya Sorokin gets back to where we know he can be, he could steal a series, especially if the defense tightens up the way it did over the last, 2 months. But otherwise, like, you look at it and you go, like, a Buffalo, I think, would get their asses handed to them in the playoffs. I don't see the Red Wings doing anything in the playoffs against anyone.
Listen, the Buffaloes looked, I mean, granted, the Kraken were not playing well, but the Buffalo Sabres were hella fun to watch a couple days ago.
Oh, yeah.
Going away.
Yeah. Ukko Pekka Luukkonen's having a moment, and I'm so fucking happy for this man.
You guys, literally, I had to break down Tajay's goal on TV, and I literally almost said Tajay on TV.
You should have.
No, I should not.
I say Tajay on Sabres Live, and like,
but
I don't. If you don't listen to the podcast, you don't know like the joke of it. Like Tajay Thompson, our favorite French player. Like, listen, that's his name. If I write it any other way now, I love that I get tweets that are like with the accent.
Yep,
I don't even know which way I point the accent. I think I change it up every time.
It should be away from towards the end of the word, away from the E.
Away from the E.
From bottom left to top right.
Bottom left to top right. I feel like I'm going to try to remember to do that one. It mixes up. It's cute. When they're on, they're so fun though. I think the game, Sabres Islanders, you saw them just look dominant. The way that they were breaking out the puck and you're like, oh my God, this team could do something. But then the rest of the time you're like, can you?
That's the fun.
It is the fun.
Watching
for sure.
Sports. Yeah. It's like, okay, our jobs are to analyze this to death, and that's fun too. But sometimes I've enjoyed taking a step back, watching and seeing and being totally like, okay. Well,
totally.
Sometimes there's nothing that can predict this.
Absolutely. That's why we watch. That's the whole exactly. fun of it.
No,
the whole fun
no,
of it.
No, sorry.
Stop, I can get it off my fridge.
All right. It's funner to be right though.
Do you know what though? I like to be wrong if there's something to learn for. I don't want it that like,
yeah,
I'm going to say, hey, the Islanders are good again. And then I get shit on it. And it's like, all right, whatever. But if it's like, you're saying, oh, wait, maybe the Red Wings have something. And then you're like, huh. And you start digging in why, like, it's a good question. You're going to learn something from it. Like, sure. Okay. I'll take it.
And then you start to ask yourself, how does this affect the Leafs?
Oh my God, we weren't even in our conference. Anyway, okay, let's wrap
we're
up.
We're in with the Leafs because we need to know, you know, they're probably going to play the Bruins round one. Maybe it's going to be Florida. Then which of these, imagine the Red Wings win round one, then it's Leafs Red Wings. And they're going to be like saying, we want Detroit. Then they're going to get their asses kicked. And then we're going to have all the drama in the world. And they had too many Bud Lights in round one.
Well, we'll see. Let's move over to the West because we are an equal opportunity podcast. We don't neglect either conference. Not as many narratives because some teams seem to be slotting in, but the teams that are making it interesting on the West, I'm kind of sick of Nashville right now, obviously. 8-0-2 in the last 10. They're basically locking themselves into not just a wild card position, but the first one. Colorado's on a 7-game win streak, 9-1-0 in their last 10. But then we have Vegas, who lost to Tampa Bay. Minnesota is in the hunt, but I still don't know what Minnesota is. Same with St. Louis, that is 4 points back. I'm not even going to talk about goal differential because it works out in the West right now, Sarah. Unfortunately, Calgary and Seattle both seem to have taken themselves out of the direct hunt this season. If we look at Nashville, Vegas, Minnesota, and St. Louis, Sarah, which one's the real deal or the couple two that are the real deal and which one or ones are the fraud?
Imagine Vegas is the fraud. Oh my God. The pats on the back the NHL GMs are going to have with each other is going to be, they can't do this to me. They can't do this to us. Like, they need to get in the playoffs so we can keep having fun deadlines. Like, I can't live like this. And then it's like, yeah, Mark Stone is one of your most effective players, if not your most effective player. Of like, they're not faking him
right.
being out. This is what's happening.
No, he didn't have back surgery last year. His spleen isn't lacerated. He's just out.
But I think they obviously, like, I can't see them missing. And then I am interested in the Blues. They kind of gave, I don't know, from some of the minutes that I watched of the game last night, they kind of gave the Avs a fight. Like, I was intrigued. I liked that they didn't do much. I don't know. Like, I was pissed off at them kind of in the off season. And then they start to do the same exact thing they do every year. I'm like, well, why even fire your coach? But now they've kind of stayed in it and have been a little quiet. And you'll remember how fun that series was with the Avs back, I don't know, a few seasons ago. Like, I wouldn't mind them kind of sneaking up. They have kind of a exciting younger. I really like the way Robert Thomas plays. I don't think he's talked about enough. Fuck the Predators. Like, that's all I'll say. Like, I guess I'm swearing a lot and just saying what I feel. But
I'm quoting Taylor Swift. You're saying fuck. It's like we've traded places.
The Predators, I guess if you're Barry Trotz, you come in and you want to make a statement, like your first year of being a GM, right? Like, imagine he does nothing. And then the team is trending up, headed into the deadline. So what do? Right. And then you get people for fifth round picks. It really is like, why not just improve the team if you can, which you can. And then when you have, my thing is, I'm coming around to, if you have Saros, you just like, just keep competing until he's gone, I guess. Because you didn't trade him a few years ago when I think you should have. At this point, just ride it out.
Shayna, what do you make of the West wild card situation?
I feel like the Wild had an opportunity and they had one of the easier schedules and it felt like, all right, they had a real shot and they blew it and the Predators ran with the opportunity. I have too many doubts in the Blues. I think that Kyrie Buchnevich and Thomas are doing the most, and so are their goalies, and it's just not enough. Their defense, I hate, and they've had so many power play problems on top of it that I'm like, I just don't see it for them. Nashville, can I talk about them? I like them.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I mean,
what they're doing is impressive.
The issue is,
it is. I like them.
Unfortunately,
it's like tricky their direction because I remember reading from Barry Trotz saying something like, "It's so hard to make the playoffs," and the way that the team bounced back from all it took was canceling a trip to the Sphere. Who knew? It's like I don't know what it is why Andrew Brunette apparently attracts these situations. Like you think of the Panthers and the strip club situation, and this time he put his foot down and made sure we don't have a redo of that. You can't go to the strip club. You're not going to the Sphere. That's what we're doing. We're not making the same mistake twice. And that's what
gravity
like,
in the NHL. It's the best coaching technique.
The Sphere, what was happening there was a U2 concert. And yes. Maybe they reversed the curse when U2 was put on all of our phones against our wills.
Ooh.
Maybe that's
You sound just like JT Brown. And I was speaking from experience as someone whose spouse went to the U2 concert in the Sphere and I was unable to go.
Wait, same concert?
Not the exact same, but he went earlier in the season and I was unable to go. And then we were confused on which date I could have actually gone. And so I didn't get to see them. And I'm very sad about it. So
I love you too. Don't get me wrong.
I don't.
I love you too, Sarah.
Oh, I love you both. I love you too. And I love you too.
I love you two humans. I don't love you two. And that's why the Predators are my team. But no, like, honestly, I feel like they were the team too. Like earlier in the season, you saw like the impact of Andrew Brunette early, like the way that they played defensively, you could see. And now that Saros is like heating up a little bit, and we've seen it before, him just go on a run in the second half. Like, I'm happy for them. I love that top line with Phil Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly. And the fact that they kept Novak, I think, was the right move. They literally got handed Jason Zucker for nothing for taking on his cap hit. Then I'm like, go. Yeah, exactly. If they spent anything, I'd be like, that's not the move. But why not? It feels like I like that the players got rewarded for turning things around after absolutely positively eating shit. So, you know, for them, I say go off. It's not like they need draft picks. They have so many picks already over the next few years too, that it feels like they can still like have the best of both worlds. But Vegas, I mean, if Vegas misses, it's just something else. And like, I get it now. If Vegas makes it, we're just going to hear complaints like, oh, the Jets or the Avs have to play them round one and that should be a round three matchup. And the Canucks, if they lose to Vegas, then it'll be like, if the Canucks Vegas round one happens and the Canucks do not get past them, I feel like the discourse is going to be insufferable. Like, they cheated and now they're here. And it's like, I get it, but also everybody else can. I just like, I want to see this team at full strength, or as full strength as they can be. Like, I want to see Hurdle with this team and how they're going to look this year with all the deadline additions, with Hanifin, with Mantha, and just see what they can do, because you look at them over the last stretch and they are playing so poorly at times at 5-on-5. Like, that, you know, they're lucky that other teams around them suck.
They were really bad around January too. And it's that's when I was like, maybe they're cooked, but then they come back and you're just like, well, it's the Golden Knights. So yeah. I guess like we really will see. It's going to be interesting.
Well, this is the fun time of year, everyone. This is when everything changes on any given night and every team's hopes and dreams seem to switch by multiple spots in the standings just because of one goal that sways the direction of a game. This is what it's all about. We hope that you enjoy it. We'll keep watching. We'll keep talking about it. But it is time to wrap up our episode. And as we are doing in the month of March, Women's History Month, because we get a month and then we go back to being disencouraged and disapproved of for the rest of the 11 months of the year. Just kidding. We want to shout out some special women that mean a lot to us or that are standing out for whatever reason we decide is worth celebrating. And so, Sarah, I will have you go first.
I will shout out my friend Chelsea. Is that allowed? She is turning 29 next Wednesday, and she's somebody that is always been there for me and taught me, when you get older, when you get in your late 20s, early 30s, you're thinking about like the importance of female friendships and the way nothing can replace them in your life at all. Like, that is an irreplaceable thing to me. And no matter how they shift or change, it's like they need to be a priority in my life. So happy birthday, Chelsea. Love you. Go Canucks. It's from Vancouver. Moved to Boston. We met on Twitter and now we're inseparable.
I love that. Shayna.
I'm going to shout out Jamie Hirsch, who I think is killing it. Especially,
she's awesome.
I love her play-by-play calls. That like, listen,
and I have from a studio often, which is very challenging.
Like, I have my issues with NHL Network's accessibility, but if you get to watch those showcase games and hear her on the call, I think she's done such a great job. And now she's doing PWHL games as well, which I love. She's just becoming such a great, like, she's always been a great host and analyst for hockey, but I feel like she's just adding something else into the mix with this, with her play-by-play calling. And like, I get pumped when I hear like she's going to be on the call. So we love that for her. We love more women's voices in hockey and these roles that, like, you know, we're seeing women break into analyst roles on TV. Like, I don't know, our dear friend Allison, and to see you between the benches and stuff. And now to hear it on play-by-play, like, this is what we need more of.
Jamie is also one of those women who will come up to you and, you know, like Jackie Redmond, like 100%. Women that are in these positions that you've watched forever, you look up to, and you're like a little, not intimidated, but like maybe, okay, I'm not going to bother her or something like that.
100%.
So it means the world when they come up to you, and people are busy. Like, sometimes it doesn't happen with people, and it doesn't mean they're a bad person, but it just means so much more when somebody like Jamie, I'll never forget her like coming up to me and being like, oh my God, hi, Sarah. I'm like, hi, Jamie. Like, yeah, I love right. you.
AJ Malesko did that to me. And like, I forever put her on like a super pedestal for that and many other reasons. I am going to shout out Nicole Shabazz, who works at the Kraken, and she is affectionately known as Shabs. I'm not going to fully embarrass her because she doesn't like that, but I'm just going to say this is the person who is responsible for all the amazing giveaways that the Kraken do. And she had the idea and the design for the fish that the team throws for 3 stars. But I could talk about her professional accomplishments all day, but this is a person that I admire so much because she is part of the team that runs the whole game day experience. And you have to be so on task and you have to be so on point. And it would be very easy to simply be a very directive, very task-oriented person. And she is that, but she does it with such compassion and love, and the way that she lives her life with such true, pure spirit. And it's such a great light of energy. I have so much admiration for her. And the fact that she puts up with me is like the greatest gift. So Shabs, we love you. And all I'm going to say is congrats on your award. We'll leave it at that. Yay. All right, my friends, that's it for us this episode. We so appreciate you hanging out with us. Remember that you can connect with us on the socials, and that includes YouTube at, the at sign is in our YouTube, at 2_much_man. You can get your Too Many Men merch at toomanymenmerch.com, where we have, you guys, some really sweet new headwear, including toques that are embroidered. They're really nice. We wanted to make sure that they were of the quality we wanted before we launched them, but check those out. We tweeted them earlier this week. They're awesome. Get yours there. We want to give a special happy adoptiversary to our beloved Mika Goldman, who joined the family 2 years ago today. And we want
one
to
year.
1 year, excuse me.
Only
one year
of
today.
Mika the Chaos Monster, yeah.
Feels like two sometimes, and the good and bad reasons. And we, of course, want to shout out friend of the pod, Benny Drawbars, who sent us our illustrious and amazing BitOnews drum. He is fantastic, and we appreciate him. And until we talk again, my friends, we ask all of you to please each do something, no matter how big or small, to make sure that hockey truly is for everyone. We will talk to you soon.
Love you.
Bye.